This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. As the last helicopter took off from the roof of the American Embassy in Saigon on April 30, 1975, the first wave of Vietnamese prepared to flee their country. Most left with no money, no possessions, and no idea what would come next. The first sailed out to the ships of the 7th Fleet, but long after the U.S. Navy left, rickety boats crammed with desperate people sailed into the South China Sea. The boat people, as they came to be known, ended up in refugee camps, hoping for a chance to restart their shattered lives. 30 years ago, an estimated 15,000 Vietnamese lived in the United States. Today, that number is over 1.3 million, and they live in communities across the country. In a way, their story parallels other immigrant groups. The children of those refugees are now doctors, lawyers, shopkeepers, beauticians, restaurateurs, and, yes, gangsters, too. In other ways, their stories are unique. Later in the program, we'll talk about American soldiers who've returned to visit the country where they served so long ago. But first, Vietnamese in America. If you came here from Vietnam after the war, if you were born here to Vietnamese immigrants, if you were one of the children left behind from the union of an American father and a Vietnamese mother, we'd like to hear your story. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. You can also send us email. The address is totn@npr.org. Joining us now is Dat Nguyen. His family escaped shortly after the fall of Saigon. He was born in a refugee camp near Little Rock, Arkansas. He now plays linebacker for the Dallas Cowboys. Dat Nguyen, welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Oh, thank you for having me.
What have your parents told you about their escape from Vietnam?
Well, I remember I was growing up, they always really only brought it up when I was a little kid, when I was younger, and when I used to get in trouble. They told me, you know, how fortunate we really are when we came over to America, have an opportunity to live another day.
When you used to get into trouble, this was what, in high school?
When I was in junior high.
And what were you doing?
I was just, you know, not obeying them.
Uh-huh.
And not doing what they wanted me to do. And, you know, they bring back the stories and tell me, you know, basically tell me that, you know, my dad used to work when he was 11 years old. He used to walk 5 miles with bamboo shoots on his back, and he can't go home until he sold all the bamboo shoots because he wanted to carry everything back. But, you know, they didn't really touch really as a family on the subject. It's just because I think it was something that it was a chapter of their life that they have closed. And knowing that, hey, the Lord had given them another day, another light, and another life to live, and that's why they move on.
Your family eventually moved to the Gulf Coast, to Rockport, Texas, and worked in the shrimping industry.
Yes, sir.
We've heard stories that there was considerable tension there, particularly in the early days.
Yes, there was a lot. Even as a kid, you know, sitting back now looking at it, I didn't realize it. Going to school, my mom would always tell me, you know, only speak to your families or your brothers and sisters and your relatives, because that's the only people you could really trust. And there was a lot of tensions going on, because you got to understand that we came from nothing, where we decided, we got all together as a Vietnamese immigrant. We built boats. We went out and worked from dusk to dawn, and the people that were there in the community weren't too happy, because they were saying that we were stealing their income. And there was a lot of tension. And I think, you know, it might die out a little bit, but, you know, I think there's a lot of people still hold grudges against us.
Gives you insight into perhaps the experience of other immigrants at other times in America.
What's that? I'm sorry.
I was wondering if that gave you any insight into the experiences of other immigrants at other times in America.
I think it's very similar. I think if you're talking about the African-American and, you know, you can understand and see why there was so much tension or why there's so much hatred.
Yeah.
Because for us, you know, as a Vietnamese American or Asian American, we are hard workers. We are dedicated in what we do. And when we do it, we do it to perfection. And I think a lot of people that were there before didn't appreciate that, because they were like, oh, we have all this water. We just go out and work when we want, do what we want, and, you know, do what it is to just make it through the day.
Yeah.
And as Vietnamese American, we came over, we know that that's the only way we can get food on the table, only way we can pay for bills or whatever we have to do for kids, to put clothes on the kids or whatever it is. But I think that's where we had a little bit more fire, more hungry in us to prove that we had to do just to live.
When you started to be recognized as a terrific football player, was there an expectation somehow that you would be the Jackie Robinson of the Vietnamese?
You know, what's crazy is that it never really crosses my mind, but I know deep down that every day I wake up, I'm not just representing my family or my community. I'm representing all the Vietnamese Americans that are around the country, knowing that I'm an icon and knowing that I open doors and break barriers for other kids that dream to do what I do, because I know I'm very fortunate. I'm very blessed to be where I'm at. And, you know, he could have chose a million other people to do what I'm doing, and he chose me. And you know, hopefully I did open the doors, but you got to understand the percentage is very small to do what I do. And if I can tell any other kid, just dream about what you're doing, but the chances of being a doctor and a lawyer is a little bit more higher than playing professional football.
Dat Nguyen, thanks very much for being with us. And minicamp opens, what, next week?
We have a rookie minicamp tomorrow.
Ah, well, good luck.
Football season's right around the corner again already.
Well, I hope you got a rest in the off season and you'll be ready to play against everybody except the Giants.
Thank you very much, sir.
Dat Nguyen is a linebacker for the Dallas Cowboys and joined us by phone from his home in Dallas, Texas. With us here in Studio 3A is Hung Nguyen, no relation. Hung Nguyen is president of the National Congress of Vietnamese Americans, and it was kind enough to join us here. Thanks very much for coming in today.
Thank you for having us.
And the story that Dat Nguyen told about his parents and him growing up, this is a story that many Vietnamese could also tell.
It is a story. I mean, I found myself listening to Dat and shaking my head and agreeing with a lot of stuff that he said. You know, we're hard workers. You had an introduction that many of us came here with nothing. That was the case with our family, and I'm actually happy to say I was a child of welfare. We came here with nothing, and the government provided some means, and now some of us, through hard work, were able to wear nice suits, to be in the Capitol, to be football players, to be business owners.
Mm-hmm.
And even what Dad said about, you know, getting into trouble. I used to get into trouble as a child, and it was very funny that for whatever reason, you get into trouble, and your parents would say, well, you know, if you don't shape up, we're going to send you back to Vietnam. And that just kind of, our story for some of us was worse than having the monster underneath the bed or hidden in your closet.
Did your family, like his, live in a refugee camp in this country?
We did. We left Vietnam in 1975, and I was talking to my mom this past weekend, actually, about that and our story, and they said we just kind of headed out because we were also fishermen, and we headed out to sea a few days before the fall of Saigon, not knowing where we were going to end up. But we eventually ended up at Camp Pendleton in San Diego, as many other refugees did.
And it's been a long journey since then. I mean, I know that people who ran businesses in Vietnam, people who were intellectuals, wealthy people, suddenly found themselves utterly destitute, doctors unable to ply their trade. It must have been a desperate time.
It is a very desperate time. I mean, like you said, there's some generals, I've heard of stories where there are generals in the army. They became janitors. There are nobody here in the United States, so they became janitors because that's the only way you can make a living for your family. The good thing is, I mean, many of us 30 years ago were refugees, and oftentimes we had a very difficult time the last 30 years, and we still continue to. But I have to say, though, that we've gone a long way. Now you have people who are bankers for Citibank or insurance agents for State Farm, and, you know, everybody talks about being a good neighbor and stuff, but you see these people becoming Americans, but they haven't forgotten who they are as Vietnamese, so there's still a cultural heritage still that's involved.
We're talking today about Vietnamese in America. If you'd mm-hmm. like to join our conversation, the phone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. And let's begin with Ross. Ross joins us from Berkeley, California.
Hello, Neil.
Hello.
My experience in Vietnam started in 1974 when, at the age of 19, I went alone to Vietnam to open an office for a child welfare organization called Friends of Children of Vietnam. Ultimately, we took in many orphans for adoption and were responsible for hundreds of children who were evacuated during what's become known as Operation Baby Lift.
That was just before the fall of Saigon.
That's correct. And I was subsequently evacuated from the roof of the embassy by helicopter early in the hours of April 30th.
That has to be one of the most vivid experiences of your life.
It certainly was. It has colored my entire life. And in fact, Now I'm going back to Vietnam quite frequently as in my role as vice chair of the U.S. Vietnam Chamber of Commerce to try to promote reconciliation and business between Vietnam and the United States.
And I wonder from that day 30 years ago, what would have utterly astounded you had you known that fact 30 years ago?
Well, I think that what is so remarkable is how far Vietnam has come since then. The days immediately after the change of government were very dark in Vietnam, and indeed for many years afterwards, as many of the boat people can attest. But in the last few years, things have really started to turn around there, and Vietnam is a much brighter place today.
Thanks very much for the phone call, Ross. We appreciate it.
My pleasure, Neil. Thank you.
And as the Vietnamese arrived in this country, the vast majority after 1975, there was considerable hostility. I'm just thinking there was a Gallup poll taken at the time. 54% of Americans said they opposed a settlement of Vietnamese in this country. It had to have been difficult times. There are also stories of Ku Klux Klan rallies, that sort of thing.
It was a very difficult time. And I want to, first of all, say thank you very much to the veterans and the men and women who were actually in Vietnam and those who gave their lives. But more importantly, like you said, 54% of the people opposed the resettlement of the Vietnamese American community. And I want to say thank you to those who, through their resistance, allowed us to come here. Because as we mentioned, we came here with nothing. Now we're contributors to the American economy. In 1997, according to the census, we put about $9.3 billion into the American economy. That's not bad for a small community. And these are the people you would have said no to and closed the door on. Now they're leaders in the community. Like you have a Dad Nguyen who's the football player. And it was very difficult. You have a lot of folks saying, we don't want you in our neighborhoods. Like, for example, in San Jose, California, a lot of Vietnamese communities, the families, they lived in small homes because not everybody can afford homes. So people have to live in small apartments. And so they paved. So there are obviously a lot of people in the homes. You have a lot of cars. Well, we don't need grass, so we pave it over so cars can park. Well, some people don't want you in our community. We don't want those kind of people in our community. So it still happens actually today.
We're going to take a short break now. When we return, we'll continue our discussion about Vietnamese in America and take more of your calls. 800-989-8255, TOTN at NPR.org. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Our guest is Hung Nguyen, the president of the National Congress of Vietnamese Americans. We're talking today about the issues Vietnamese Americans faced and have overcome, and the issues, of course, they continue to face today in the U.S. 30 years after the fall of Saigon. Of course, you're invited to join us. Our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, and the email address is TOTN at NPR.org. And joining us now is Kien Nguyen. He's the author of the novel The Tapestries and the memoir The Unwanted. He's joining us from the studios of Little Saigon Radio in Westminster, California. Nice of you to be with us today on Talk of the Nation.
Thank you for having me.
Your books are about your experiences as I guess the phrase is Amerasian.
Amerasian.
Yes. Yes. Your father is American, your mother Vietnamese.
Yes, and I was born in Vietnam in Nha Trang, outside of Saigon. I was one of the Amerasian that was left after the fall of Saigon and experienced 10 years under the communism. And in 1985, I came to America.
Mm-hmm. What was it like growing up half American in Vietnam?
It was very difficult because the South Vietnamese harbors some hatred for us. Because we resemble the American that left Vietnam, the North Vietnamese, the communists, are trained to hate us. So growing up as Amerasian, I experienced so many different bias. And especially when we go to school, if you read The Unwanted, I describe about my relationship with my relative who also ostracized us.
Hmm. One of the things that we continually hear from Americans, whether they were soldiers or not, who visit Vietnam today, is how graciously they are received by the Vietnamese as Americans, yet your experience as a half Vietnamese was very different.
Yes, I think that when the fall of Saigon, there's a lot of anger among the people and that anger needs to divert somewhere. We just happened to be children. When I left, I was a teenage, and many of us, I was fortunate, I have a mother who took very good care of us. A lot of other children grew up on the street, and there was nicknamed Dirt of Life, and they basically have to survive on their own.
And you came to this country under a program that sought to get people like you out of Vietnam.
Yes, interfered by the United Nations, they have a program called Orderly Departure Program, which allowed the Amerization to come to America. And we left on that. My mother, my brother, my sister and I, we all left in 1985. And we came to Georgia.
Georgia must be a very different place than South Vietnam.
It's a very different place, but I only live in Georgia for 2 days because I stay there and I discover there is the same tension that directed upon us. It's the same as it was in Vietnam. And somebody told me that New York City was a much better place, more like a city of Oz. Everybody can stay and be whoever they are. So I told my mother that I wanted to go to to New York City. So after 2 days, my mother cashed her welfare check for $178, and she gave it all to me. I bought a one-way ticket to New York on the Greyhound bus for $176. So I came to New York with $2 with a promise to my mother that I will take her with me in 3 months.
Did you keep that promise?
I did. I came to New York and I knew I had to take... I never been to New York. I know no English. I had no idea where I should go. And I looked at this map. I studied that map for about 2 hours, the subway map. And it said Chinatown, and I can only take one subway ride, that's it. So I took the subway ride to Chinatown, got myself a job as a waiter in a Vietnamese restaurant, and a place to stay for $200 a month. And I worked, and I saved the money, and I brought my mother with me to New York City 3 months after that.
I should say that you've gone on to considerably more success afterwards, not just a published author, but a dentist as well.
Yes, sir. One of my biggest dreams when I came to New York was walking down the street, and I wanted to have a place on Central Park. I thought it was such a beautiful place. And in 1998, when I graduated as a dentist and got my license to practice, I opened my practice in Central Park West and 68th Street, overlooking Athens Park, and I thought my life went in full circle.
Let's get some more callers on the line. Let's talk now with Ramona. Ramona's with us from Reno, Nevada.
Hello.
Hello. You're on the air, Ramona. Go ahead.
Hi. Yes, I was born at the height of the war in a town outside of Saigon, and I did not actually come to America until I was almost 7 years old. I hardly have any memories of Vietnam, but I was adopted by an American family in Sacramento, California, and I kind of grew up always feeling not really part of any group and always feeling disconnected and having no roots, and I still struggle with that every day. My mom gave me up for adoption. I haven't seen her since I was 5 years old, and my father, I think, was an officer, and he knew that he had a child, but he was called back to the United States, or his term was up or something when I was a few months old, and my mom never gave any information about him, and so I've always wanted to find him, but I just feel like it's impossible. So I just wanted to...
I wonder, Kien Nguyen, does this story about feeling halfway between two worlds, that must have some resonance for you?
Oh, definitely. I totally understand Ramona and identify with her. I don't know who my father is. I question that every single day of my life. I think the Amerization as a group, are very it deserves some more attention. We came here as teenagers or a lot younger than that. We have no support. Most of us don't have the education in both languages. We are not adapt to take care of ourselves, and we basically have to grow up and survive on our own. We're very scattered. We don't have the group that I think my book is the only book that talk about it in the recent years. Before that, nobody heard about it. And I think one of the biggest problem we have is that many Amerindians are not U.S. citizenship, and when they get in trouble, they liable to be deported back to Vietnam. And I'm trying to work on that to change the law.
I wonder, Hung Nguyen is also with us here in the studio. Is that an issue that the Vietnamese community as a whole is working on?
It is something that some members of the community are working on. And I think something to a little background here is that after the Patriot Act, after 9/11, this is something that's going on with a lot of the other Asian countries, Southeast Asian countries, where what our other guest speakers are saying is that if somebody is considered a felon, for example, recently in Montgomery County, Maryland, a young man, several years ago, when he was a teenager in high school, broke the law. Mm-hmm. He admitted to something that he said he didn't do. Well, because of that, it's on his record. Now, he was up for deportation. His family is here. He does not know anybody in Vietnam. And in some instances, some people do not know any language skills, have no connection to anybody, but because of our government, we're going to send them back. And what our other speakers were saying is that is something that's happening, and some folks are looking more into that, is because one of the things is that the Vietnamese community is not as empowered politically. We're still getting more involved with the process, and because of that, we're a little slower. And that's where we're also working with some of the other Asian communities, Asian Pacific American communities, to work jointly on these sort of legislation. And just kind of let you know, too, though, that I think Ramona had mentioned the order... Ramona or Ken had mentioned the orderly departure program.
Yes.
Technically, those programs ended a few years ago, but this past year, what's known as the Davis Amendment, Tom Davis from Virginia, actually through the support of some of the Vietnamese American community, pushed for an extension to this law that was originally called the McCain Amendment bill or whatever. But basically, it allows Amerindians to have a quicker process to get into the United States and not go through the same paperwork as a lot of the other folks. Because ultimately, we as an American society have to be responsible for the children we leave behind in other places.
Ramona, I wonder, have you ever been back to Vietnam?
I went back in 99, and I have to say, I thought it would bring back memories, but it really didn't spark anything, and tried to find the place where I was born and was converted to a video store, and I'm just curious, is there some kind of organization for, because the number that I've heard is over 25,000 children were born from that war, and I mean, that's the size of a small town. I'm just wondering if any group has formed to try to reunite American fathers with their Amerindian children.
Ken Nguyen, can you help us there?
No, there is no group. Like I said, we are very scattered. I recently consider myself part of the Vietnamese community in Orange County because I was being received with open arms, and I get tremendous support from the Vietnamese community here. As far as looking for father, I think the American Red Cross can help you, and a few other group, but nothing permanent.
If I can interject,
specific.
Go ahead, Hung Nguyen.
I do know that there is, in light of just looking for your parent, the father, I know that there are some support groups for adoptees, Amerindian adoptees, that have formed, and I can give some information later on.
Okay, and what we'll do, Ramona, if you want to access that information, well, get in touch with us here. Send us an email, totn@npr.org, and we'll relay that information on to you.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks very much for the phone call.
Mm-hmm.
And Ken Nguyen, we wanted to thank you for your time today. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Kien Nguyen is the author of the novel The Tapestries and the memoir The Unwanted. His next book will be called House of Echoes, about his experience as a young Amer Asian immigrant in the Bronx. We're talking today about the experience of Vietnamese in America 30 years after the fall of Saigon, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation, which is coming to you from NPR News. And let's get another caller on the line. And this is Patricia. Patricia's calling us from Raleigh, North Carolina.
Good afternoon. I wanted to know, I came over in the 80s. I'm a boat person. And it's funny because now people are calling me, there's a joke that I'm a Twinkie. I'm white on the inside and yellow on the out. And now I have my own children. I'm married to an American. I can't use those threats to my kids anymore, you know, sending them back to Vietnam. And I guess there's a lot of us that are real confused, you know, coming over around 7 years old, kind of like the Amer Asians. You're half American and half Vietnamese. Now, how do we take our generations, our youngest generations, now that, you know, we're all growing up, having kids, they're all Americanized, but you don't want them to lose that touch of our Vietnamese heritage, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the biggest, struggles I'm having raising my own child.
As it goes into a third generation, Hung Nguyen, Patricia's not alone.
No, she isn't. I actually came here when I was 4 or 5 years old,
mm-hmm.
and... You know, Patricia was mentioning that, you know, this difficulty of the threat no longer works, and that often is the case. But I do know that there's a lot of churches around the country are very involved in language schools.
Right.
And so you can have your child go to the school. I mean, I was a child. I went to school, and I hated it.
I know what you're talking about.
You know, putting the accent marks on the words and letters, I hated it. You know, even
yep.
today I write, and I rarely put accent marks on them. But
yep.
God bless my parents to understand what I'm writing.
Yep, and I look back today of my parents saying, under my roof you speak Vietnamese. Out anywhere else, you can speak any language. And it was one of the toughest things for me growing up. Because you want to be so Americanized. And now, as an adult, I want to revert back to being Vietnamese again.
And do you speak Vietnamese with your children?
My daughter knows how to order all the Vietnamese meals by herself. So she's 6 years old. So I'm starting. It's difficult since I don't speak the language very fluently because I don't have any family over here. I'm not very fluent and I can't practice every day. And Raleigh's still a very small Vietnamese community here. Like you said, that's a great idea about churches and everything. Trying to get involved in that community.
And I would also suggest that there are some online websites that have software that you can teach your child how to speak Vietnamese. You know, they're not that great, really, to tell you the truth. I think the best experience is to be around other Vietnamese Americans
right.
who can help you. And I think I know that north in Raleigh, there is, like you said, a small emerging community. And also there's some Montagnards, too. And the Montagnards have their own language, but they also speak Vietnamese.
Right. Correct. Well, thank you so much.
Thanks for the call, Patricia.
All right. Have a wonderful day.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I wonder, in this country, you're regarded as Vietnamese. When you return to Vietnam, I understand people who come back are called the Viet Q.
We are. We are known as Viet Q, and that translates literally to overseas Vietnamese. I had a conversation with somebody about this a while ago, a foreign minister, and I said, you know, when you call this that to me, I feel insulted because I am an American of Vietnamese descent. And the person says, well, there's no offense. We just don't know how else to refer to you. But my thing is, we're American citizens now. And when somebody refers to you as an overseas Vietnamese, it almost says that they still have control over you, dominance over you. And I take offense at that. And I think that's one of the reasons why a lot of Vietnamese Americans take offense at the Vietnamese government right now. Because, you know, the war is 30 years ago. But to a lot of people, the war has not ended. That doesn't mean that people are still fighting the war, but it's about equality. It's about the treatment of persons. We left not just in 1975, but we also left in 1954 because we were Catholics living in the North. My grandma lived in the same hometown, Binh, as Ho Chi Minh. They probably knew each other. But the thing is, we had to leave in 1954 because of discrimination. of communism against Catholicism. And again, in 75, we left. Had we stayed behind, we would have been persecuted, because a lot of the folks earlier had mentioned that, you know, they were behind. They came here under the orderly departure program, or the HO humanitarian order. But the thing is, VidQ is a derogatory term for us, you know, because if anything, they should refer to us as a Vietnamese American, because, again, we're Vietnamese in America.
Hung Nguyen, thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Hung Nguyen is president of the National Congress of Vietnamese Americans, was here with us in Studio 3A. When we come back from a short break, a soldier's story, a return to Vietnam. It's NPR News.